Line's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard, please.
Come on, Brent.
Line's good.
Got real close.
The hair high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham Scott. Alongside, as always, hello, Scott.
Sean, welcome, welcome, welcome.
It's going again.
Uh-oh.
First day with the soundboard.
We've got a soundboard. It took us 8 years, but here we are. Yeah, that was fun. I like listening, and maybe we should put that on social media.
A little dance, yeah.
To the song. Yeah, that was good. What inspired you to get that done?
Well, so my laptop hasn't been working great the past little while. Mm-hmm. And when I decided not to purchase a new one, it was really just the camera that wasn't working. And so rather than purchase a new computer just for the cam part, I just got a cheap webcam. And as I was setting it up and trying to make it the default camera option instead of the internal one that wasn't working, I discovered that there was a soundboard feature that was available to us.
And
played around with it a bit on the weekend and thought I'd bust it out tonight.
Well, I liked it for one. And now we're going to be able to, you know, embed clips.
Yeah.
If we want.
Yeah, so I think definitely we'll get F off Oscar as one. That's one we have to have.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you think if you played YouTube, would we be able to hear it live?
No, I believe it has to be in the site here.
An embedded clip.
Okay. An embedded clip. So I'd have to clip stuff and pop it in, and then we could do it.
Okay. Well, that gives us some options for,
yeah,
you know, our media watching adventures in the summer, or
yeah,
anything else really.
Maybe a return of name that shot.
Oh, I like that. Yeah,
we got
the
audio easier to do.
That would be way better.
Yeah.
I like that.
So exciting times here on the podcast, and exciting times, Scott, in the world of Matt Dunstone, as he has won his first Briar Championship, beating Kevin Cooey on Sunday night in the final to win, as I say, for the first time for him. It was his third final appearance, and he finally breaks through after some heartbreaks with a 6-3 victory. Scott, what are your top line takeaways for Matt Dunstone and this championship?
We've said for a long time that it wasn't a matter of if, but when. Mm-hmm. And I do think one of us picked Matt Dunstone to win.
I think
I think it's about time. And his team was not about time, like, oh, it's about time. But his team was, if not the best team there, they were definitely in the conversation, right? I think there were four teams that were clearly head and shoulders above everybody else this week.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of them, and we expected that from the beginning. I wasn't surprised. I was a little surprised they lost on Friday night, to be honest, but
well, they didn't lose on Friday night. They lost on Saturday night.
Saturday night. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
I was surprised they lost on Saturday night. That was the only game I didn't watch of the Briar this year. Me too. Until the next morning, because that's the one that's like, well, we're going to see both teams again. So
yeah, we're seeing them both tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I had the option of staying home and watching that game. We're going to see a community theater production of 9 to 5, the musical. Actually, it was Carleton University Theater Troupe.
Oh.
And got to support the arts.
Yeah, got to support the arts. Good, good, good. I think, we saw Brad Gushue win his first in St. John's 9 years ago. He went on to win 5 of the next 7 more.
He sure did.
I could see this being a Dunstone, the start of a similar type run.
Yeah, definitely.
Who comes into play front end, right?
Well, yeah, he's going to need at least a new second. We'll see what Ryan Harnden decides to do. I'd be stunned if he and Colton Lott don't continue to play together.
Yeah.
But front end, at least one player that they'll need at the moment. But I think, Scott, there was an article on Sportsnet, and forgive me, I can't remember who wrote it, but on Sunday. And it's basically saying that this year's Brier showed that there is an alarming gap in talent in Canadian men's curling, because you had Gushue, Jacobs, Cooey, this Renaissance Cooey Brier, and then Dunstone, and then the other two playoff teams. Like, it's great that they made the playoffs, and we'll talk about them, but at this point, not really going to be threats to win. And this maybe presents or represents a problem. But I thought, like, if you go back to 2008-09, it's Howard Martin and Stoughton was there, and kind of everyone else is playing for fourth place. And yeah, you had 10 years ago, the amazing Pat Simmons, John Morris, kind of middle finger Brier after the disbandment of the Cooey's at that point team. But I mean, we've been doing the show for is it our ninth Brier that we've done, eighth or ninth Brier? And every year we say how many teams can win. I don't think we've ever gotten past five.
I don't think so, no. When you think of like the women's field this year, there was much more that could win. Probably because Rachel Holman wasn't there, but
sure.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think there's a lot of good stories that came from this Brier. I think there's succession planning. Like, you could see the succession in some of the teams. They're not all going to be configured this way. But there's also a lot of players that didn't make it to the Brier that are quite good that, you know, will be seeking other teams, and who knows?
Yeah, I think you look at somebody like maybe Tyler Tardy. Who knows what happens with that team? Maybe he goes back to skipping. Brendan Botcher, you got to imagine, will go back to skipping. I think Braden Calvert showed himself very well this week. We've seen Jordan McDonald at the trials. He can make a bunch of shots.
Yeah,
probably has to improve his soft stuff, kind of the Kerry Anderson vein, come out young and make all the high hard ones and then got to pull it back. Rachel Holman, pretty much every young player is like that, actually. You got to learn how to, or learn when and how to dial it back. So there are some people out there across the country for sure. And Jaden King and his team performed really well this week. So in this moment, if we project forward and we'll see what happens with Jacob's teams, if they maybe all want to take a break for a little bit, Kevin Cooey made comments over the course of the week of, I'm not going to tell you when I'm going to retire. You'll just notice I won't be here anymore, which, love the Irish exit idea for you. Gushue's obviously gone. Who knows what's going to happen with McEwen and his team. So as you look at it and kind of handicap it right now, unless Botcher comes back to skip with the pretty good team around him, it is kind of Dunstone's world here a little bit for the next bit.
Yeah, for sure. We've got a couple of people hanging around on the outskirts, and who knows what Jacob's team does. I think you said that, but who's going to stop him, right? At this right now, no team is close, but they're going to get more reps, these young teams that are coming up. We got the Horgans too, that
Who knows where they're going to
have a team, right? So and Felix is going to team up with the guys he beat in Quebec. So maybe they take a step forward and they get more reps under their belt, right? Brad Gushue went to how many Briars before he won one? 14, something like that.
Crazy, yeah.
So and he wasn't a contender at all of them. He was sort of in the playoff mix, but didn't make the playoffs in quite a few. And so it takes time for these. You're not going to have a lot of 28-year-olds winning the Brier. It's just not that kind of sport, right? Mm-hmm. So the reps matter. All of the time together as a team matters. Communication matters so much, and you only get better at that doing it more. So.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to forget that Brad Gushue did not qualify for the 2014 trials, right? Like that's sort of where he was at that point, like not a top player, and it took him a while to get into that stratosphere. And to do it, he had to kind of develop Gallant and Walker as players, sort of taking them, certainly Gallant from when he was a junior, and turning him into a very high quality player at the men's level. That's a lot of Brad Gushue's work into that to develop him. So it's, yeah, it's going to take a while. It's a very early victory for Dunstone, as you say, career wise.
Yeah, so, he's 30?
I think so, yeah.
31? Yeah.
Something like that. So for skips, as you saw with Kevin Cooey, you could play until you're 50. Glenn Howard did the same thing at a pretty high level. So a very impressive victory for them. In terms of the game, Scott, the actual game on Sunday night, I got to say, it wasn't the most compelling final I've ever watched. The shot making was very good, very high quality.
Yeah.
And the only thing I will remember from it, though, is Matt Dunstone saying in the seventh end, it's time to dance. And which is a great line. It's amazing. But it's also indicative of the fact that they weren't dancing for the previous little bit. Like,
yeah,
like they did blank five and six. Like, all right, now it's time to go. And that is part of the sport. Like, when do you go? When do you make your move? And he says it's time to dance, and they get the three. And that kind of, it in the moment, I didn't think the game was over, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But after the force in eight, I did think the game was over. So much so that I actually fell asleep and had to woke up and had to rewind it to watch the ninth and tenth ends.
Yeah, but you, like, you're right. The game itself was not super compelling all the way through. But the shot making was excellent.
Yeah, outstanding.
And having the precision to be able to do all that, where one little error will get you a blank. We talked in last year's final about Dunstone being too passive, right? Not going for it when he had the chance.
Yeah.
Letting it sort of slip away because of all the blanks and blanks. And then he got forced by mistake, right? And it was just like, oh boy. And I was worried it was going to go that way again this time. But that three to me was, well, it was the turning point in the game from a probability of winning perspective, but it was also for Matt Dunstone a conscious decision to step forward and, rather than let the game come to him, take it to the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't an easy shot. It wasn't maybe even like the obvious first call. He pointed to it right away. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, good. They'll be able to get their... get there too, and like finally a deuce. But no, he saw it right away, to his credit. It might have even been there for four, but you don't want to get
that. Would have been so hard for four,
but he took advantage, right? He took advantage of his opportunities, and I think that's where it's that we see the most growth this year versus the times he's been there before.
Yeah, I agree. And I think to the weight choices and being able to dial it down more and run backs with lighter weight, not always throwing as hard as you can or the high weight, really good weight control from him. And I think Colton, I think he had Colton throw harder more often than he did himself, which is grabbing. Colton can do that as good as anybody else. Yeah. But for him, when you really need to keep your shooter around and play the control and just lean on those brushers, which you can, and they talked about in the broadcast a lot, that you can do that a lot more with the lighter weight, the board weights, the controls, those things. You can really let those guys affect the trajectory of the stone a lot more. So that was a change from previous years, I think, as well.
Yeah, you're right. It was very good sweeping ice, and they were the best brushers there, I think.
Yeah, well, I think Hubert and Gallant just had nothing left.
That's it, right? They're just, I mean, pretty wiped.
I would not be surprised if the four of those guys have not been awake since Sunday night. It's just been out, especially Gallant.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And like, yeah, mixed doubles into the four person into the Breyer with like almost no sleep.
Yeah. And I mean, at least Jacobs, I know, went home. Like, I know he went to the Sioux. I don't know if the other guys went back to Alberta.
Well, Hebert did, because he said he got sick from his kid.
Okay.
That's why he missed the first game.
Okay. Well, his kid was in Italy with him.
Oh, okay.
Or at least one of them was.
Maybe that's why, but...
Because there was a kid, we didn't talk about this, but real quick, there was a kid in this, all the kids were down there, and there was one of them who didn't have a shirt on. Like around 10 years old. And I was just like, oh, that's got to be Hebert's kid. Of course, Hebert comes over, gives a big hug. Like, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, it's in that case. Yeah, I think the Harnins were the best brushers, best front end in the field by that point. I don't think there's much doubt in that. Scott, in the semifinal, though, I felt the same. I honestly didn't find Sunday's games particularly compelling, to be honest. And I do feel like Jacobs and his guys were pretty worn out. I think the shot making in the semifinal was very good.
Yeah.
But again, that 10th end, Jacobs maybe has a shot to tie.
I think he definitely has a shot to tie, but
it's not easy. And. No. So like that end kind of got away from them. And I did feel like in the semifinal, Dunstone certainly did carry the play a lot more.
Yeah. And it felt like they were, Canada was like taking a bit of unnecessary risk.
Yeah.
Where I just talked about Dunstone, you know, capturing those moments when they saw the opportunity. I think Canada in the semifinal didn't bail early enough in a few ends, got themselves in a little bit of trouble. And with not making a perfect shot was just sort of like, oh boy, okay, we're in trouble. And then had to bail out a bit with doubles and stuff. But you're right, Dunstone carried the play in the semifinal. And if Canada gets through that Friday night and doesn't have to go 3-4, a qualification game to a 3-4 to there was a long road for them.
Yeah. They could have done it if they win Friday afternoon and then potentially only one game Saturday into the final. Yeah. It's a lot better of a chance I think they have.
Yeah. And for those guys, especially more than anyone else.
Yeah. 100%. And you saw it over the course of the week. There were some moments on the mic where you could tell that, they're kind of done in the Gushu game in the round robin.
Yeah.
Jacobs is heard on the mic saying, I hope Brad makes this. I don't want to play another end. I don't know if he said, I don't want to play another, but he said, I hope he makes this, indicating he didn't want to play an extra end. There was one, I can't remember what game this was, but they called the shot and then Kennedy looks at it and yells down. He says, hey, this jam's back here. And Jacobs just yells back, it's too late now. At one point he said something like, oh, I don't care. Like you could just tell they were kind of tired and just wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, wanted to win. Those guys are way too competitive to not want to win and to genuinely not care. Like,
yeah,
but they were just, you could tell they were tired and kind of done and ready to put their feet up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I felt that, as well, but you're right. They're too good to not, like, they can do that and still almost win an event like this. They're like sort of autopilot is that good.
Yeah. Scott, let's talk about Kevin Cooey, your silver medalist here. I don't want to call it pulling a Caitlin Laws, but now we've seen it twice in the national championships this year, where a team has gone through undefeated, beat a team twice, once in the round robin and then in the 1-2 game, and then loses the final to that same team. So Caitlin Laws and Kevin Cooey, that's pretty good company to keep, those two teams.
Yep.
But a remarkable week by Kevin Cooey and his guys. I think the signature shot for Cooey comes Friday afternoon in his game that he played against Team Canada, where he makes the very thin triple to score the three and basically take control of that game. But overall, Scott, what was your impressions of Kevin Cooey and Team Alberta?
Well, it was sort of like the fountain of youth for Kevin Cooey this week. And I don't know if it's something in the water in St. John's, because he also lost that final to Brad Gushue in 2017. So maybe, but what I expected to see more was him smiling. And, you know, it was sort of the same old Kevin Cooey, like feeling a little grumpy that I have to make this shot. But like, I did it, and the team played really well in front of him. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was the difference this week, is that he had the support of the rest of the guys. And like Tyler Tardy in particular was freaking dialed in all week. Another guy who was at the Olympics that, you know, isn't as physically tired, but I'm sure he's mentally just as tired as the other guys that came back. And so that was the difference I saw this week. Slechinski being in the house, I think they changed that this year. Whereas he was throwing third rocks and playing
and
third.
And being in the house, yeah. And I think they've swapped
the switch
those two
they
guys,
made. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. And I think Tyler Tardy.
In a five rock environment, in like the old school four rock environment, you probably have Tardy at second.
Probably. But yeah, you're right. The five rock environment, the second does need to play a lot more draws and freezes and taps and stuff. Yeah. And the third is the one that has to clean up a little bit more. So it makes a lot of sense. They didn't lose till the final. So it's a pretty good week. I think the other three guys, you know, I don't know what Kevin Cooey will do, but I see a really bright future for Tyler Tardy. Mm-hmm. Wherever he wants to play, whatever position, he can do it. Maybe Aaron Slechinski takes on skipping again with a little bit more experience in his back pocket. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting if Botcher, like a Botcher, Tardy, Slechinski, I don't know if Carrick Martin and Brendan Botcher could play together again. I don't know. But that would be an interesting team.
Yeah.
Botcher sliding in that Cooey spot.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Be something. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of possibilities there again. But that's presuming that Cooey doesn't want to play anymore, which I don't think is guaranteed by any means.
No, not at all. And I mean, I think Kevin Cooey could come back and, you know, if he wanted to skip the territories, he could do that, right?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Playing.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Who says no?
Probably Kevin Cooey.
Well, he just plays with his brother.
Yeah, but Kevin Cooey He wants to win.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think he's going to just to show up.
Okay. Good point.
I think Jamie's there for the vibes a lot. I think Jamie Cooey wants to win too, but he's there for the vibes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But great week for them.
Absolutely. All right. The other playoff team, of course, was Brad Gushue, or the other team that got into the page portion of the playoffs was, of course, Brad Gushue losing in the 3-4 game to Brad Jacobs. Scott, this game was really a lot more about Gushue being his last game than anything else. They did get a 2 in the 7th end to pull it within a point, but really Jacobs and his guys controlled that game pretty much from start to finish. They got the force in the first end, a 2 in the third, and it was really Gushue kind of chasing the whole time. And the only reason that team was in the game was because Brad Gushue made some just ridiculous shots in the first half of the game, some runs that you'd no real right to make, just incredible. To the point that Brad Jacobs said at one point, like, why is he retiring?
Yeah.
If you're going to be doing that. But what was cool about it was once it became pretty clear that the game was over, the crowd just got into like Brad Gushue and cheering him. And like he makes his last shot to give a pretty easy shot for Jacobs to win. But the crowd goes nuts and like a standing ovation. Like that was a pretty cool moment. And I'll admit, like I even got a little like misty about it. Like, you know, these parasocial relationships you have with these people by seeing them so much and hearing them, like, and just being in that setting and the people going nuts. And then like, it was really cool. It was a great moment that was executed perfectly by everybody, from the crowd to Team Canada to TSN. It was just, to me, the perfect way they did everything.
Yeah, yeah, it felt pretty remarkable that everything sort of worked out that way. You know, I would have liked Gushue to win and have that experience, but then he's got to do the Worlds, and then it's like, oh, are you sure you're not coming back? It's like, well, maybe we could, but no, I think it worked out exactly right where he gets the afternoon send off, and holy cow, talk about a shot he made on his last. Was like, as a hit and roll, but it rolled perfectly buried.
Yeah,
it was a pretty easy run back for
pretty short
run. Brad Jacobs, not for me. I think like that's and I think he said even to Mudrick, he said, well, at least I made my last. You know,
yeah.
And isn't that what we all want to do, right? When you're on the golf course, you just want to make your last putt. You want to make a shot on that last hole. And same thing with curling. You want to make your last one, get off the ice feeling good. Yeah. And I think he did that. The moment was good. I liked that there was a pre-tape piece on TSN that Brad narrated and did, so that he didn't have to do that in the moment and have to search for his words a little bit. I thought that was really good. And yeah, sort of the crowd appreciation. Mm-hmm. But Sean,
I think the pre-tape too also was smart in that it gives his family enough time to get down from the box as well.
Yeah.
So really good. And I didn't time this. I should have, but Vic lays out for at least 90 seconds, right? A pro move.
Yeah.
Just let the crowd tell this story. Like, great job. Again, that's why TSN is the best at this. Just absolutely knowing how to do it. It was great.
And that's why Vic's the best, right? He knows when to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to say anything there.
No.
Sean, I did watch it and had a question.
Okay.
As Brad Gushue was being interviewed, he talked about his time with Mark and how Jeff Walker was the longest tenured on the team. I don't think he thanked Brendan Bauncher.
No, he did.
Okay.
He did. He said, it's been great playing with Brendan for the past couple of years, and I know he's got great things ahead of him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad that was just me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, that would be a little awkward.
No, but he did. He did give Brendan Bauncher a shout out.
Okay, good. And then he came back on the final?
Yes.
In the evening and did a half an end sort of stand up with Brian Mudrick during the sixth end, I believe. So
yeah, which they didn't show in the arena, which was probably smart for just the players on the ice to have.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Like they obviously wouldn't have played the audio in the arena because the game's going on, but even just not showing the video of him being interviewed was probably smart.
Yeah. Cause then people are going nuts and they're like, why? But that's good because, you know, you have one experience that's really emotional, raw, right after losing. You've got a lot of emotions. You do your interview.
Yeah,
it was good. But this time you get a chance to come back, sober second thought, say thank you to everybody that you might have missed. I don't think he did, but there you go. And so I liked that move as well. I thought that was pretty good of TSN to give that space.
Yeah, I agree. So congratulations to Brad Gushue on obviously a tremendous career, saying the least. I have it on our list for the summer, Scott, maybe to do a like best Brad Gushue moments or something. And just on a personal note, it's still, he's given me the best answer to a question I've ever gotten in a scrum. You know, I've been going to curling events with the press pass since I think 2014, the 2014 Scotties, the 2013 mixed, which was here in Ottawa, and then the 2014 Scotties. So whatever, 12 years of being in scrums here and there, not every event, obviously, best answer I've ever gotten was 2017 trials, which was here in Ottawa. And it was three of the teams that had been the playoff teams of the previous two Briars. And I just said, hey, why is there this concentration? Why is it you guys, these teams that are always in the playoffs recently? And he just looked me dead in the eye and said, we're the best skips.
Yeah.
Like, great. It's a great answer. And it was true. And yeah.
Yeah. And Brad Gushue, like, is not maybe the most naturally talented skip in the field, right? But he works harder than anyone else and does have a lot of natural talent.
Of course.
But the hard work is really what sets him apart from everybody else.
Yeah.
It's like, he's just got it automatic, you know?
Yeah. Both practice-wise and then just managing the logistics of living in St. John's and playing out on tour. So a well-deserved ovation and send-off for Gushue and his guys. So we'll see what ends up the result for Mark Nichols and Brendan Botcher and Jeff Walker, where they end up in their curling journeys. Elsewhere, Scott, the other two playoff teams that made it into those third place spots, Jaden King, Braden Calvert, we referenced them earlier, younger teams. Jaden King, their team is very young. Braden Calvert, his squad a little older, but young for Braden Calvert in the world of skips. He's only 30. So congratulations to them. Really good weeks. Jaden King made a ton of shots. The game against Gushue in the round robin, they had no business being in that game if not for Jaden King. There's the one end he made an angle run on a corner guard that was on the left side. A left corner guard as you're looking down, and then Gushue made his shot, so he had to make a run on the corner guard on the right side, and he went and just did that. So just an incredible week for Jaden King and his guys. So good job by them. Again, Braden Calvert and his team too, they get into the playoffs in that last draw because Mike McEwen and his team stub their toe a little bit, losing to Matt Dunstone in the last game. They also lost to Braden Calvert the night before, or the afternoon before on Wednesday. So they lose their last two to miss, but good job by Braden Calvert. And I think a very good debut for both those teams.
Yeah, awesome debut for both of those teams. We're going to be seeing more of them, I assume. But yeah, like really gritty play. They played the teams that they were supposed to lose to tough. So yeah, really good to see. That Ontario came down to a three-way tie, right?
Just two. It was Ontario, Quebec.
Okay. And not James Grattan? Was that the other pool?
James Grattan was in the other pool. It was a three-way tie over in Pool B between Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and New Brunswick. On that one, you are correct, Scott. And in that one, I believe it did come down to the last stone draw as James Grattan had beaten Braden Calvert. And by just under 2 centimeters, Braden Calvert got in.
Yeah. So those last stone draws are important. But come on, bring back tiebreakers, guys. Let's go.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
I mean, three teams for one spot, that would have been two games to have to play before Friday afternoon.
I'll break the third spot on the last stone draw, whatever.
Yeah. Well, then you're getting rid of James Grattan, and that's probably the reason we want a tiebreaker in that spot.
Yeah, because they were getting hot at the end of the week.
They were, yeah.
They were sort of win-loss, win-loss, win-loss, and then 1-2 in a row, or?
Last three. They won the last three.
They won the last three in a row, yeah. They were starting to feel it, and like... Yep. Yeah, Grattan was making shots. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's the situation elsewhere there in Pool B. Jamie Cooey goes 2-6, as does Sandy McEwen, but Sandy McEwen comes away with probably the shot of the week. Thomas Coffin, tough luck 1-7 for him. He had chances in a lot of those games, especially earlier in the week, and just some tough breaks for him. And then Derek Samogoski Cody Tanaka and British Columbia, they get a win. They go 1-7 as well. Rest of the pool A, mentioned Jean-Michel Menard, his final Briar. Good week for them going 5-3. Again, strong finish Actually, no, they went sort of back and forth. Good in the middle, sorry. They won their, lost their first to Newfoundland Labrador. The great clip of Martin Crête breaking the broom when he sweeps. But then they win their next three and then lose to Jacobs, beat Zalmogoski, lose to Jaden King. And that was the key one there, the 8-7 loss to Jaden King. And they rebound to beat Tyler Smith in the last one, but are unable to make the playoffs because of that loss to Jaden King. But a good week for them. As you said, Scott, Felix is going to go play with the other guys, the guys we beat from Quebec in those provincial playdowns. So he can take all that experience, everything he's learned playing with Jean-Michel Menard and Martin Crête for the past couple of years and take it to that team. So that should be a good springboard for him and his new team.
Yeah, and Jean-François Trépanier is also hanging them up. So all three guys, I'm like happy that we got to see Jim play a couple more Briars here. You know, he'd been out of it for quite a few years and stepped back on the scene to help bring this team up. And I'm sure Felix learned a lot from him and Martin as well. Really fun to see them. I like when Quebec is fun, right?
Yeah.
And I think Ryan from Rocks Across the Pond said this, that like they're going to be 5-0 in their non-TV games and they were 0-3 on TV.
Yeah.
Which I think is true. But
that's kind of nuts.
But like I like watching the Quebec team play and like when they're strong. So going to miss those guys. But at the same time, a new team coming in. There was another loss, Sean, from the Quebec team. I'm not sure if you saw this.
What was that?
The air fryer that they purchased just 3 years ago was lost.
Oh.
It met the end of its service life.
Ooh.
And was abandoned in a St. John's hotel room.
Oh, jeez.
So RIP to the air fryer. But hopefully Felix can find a new appliance to bring along next time.
Hopefully, yeah. We should note that it was Julien Tremblay who he beat in the Quebec final. And so that's there's going to be a mashup there between Felix and Julien. So, and Julien, I believe, has been to the Briar before as a skip. So that should be a pretty strong team coming out of Quebec as we move forward. On the men's side, elsewhere, Scott, in that pool A, Tyler Smith, really tough start to the week for him, but they kind of got it together to finish 3-5. Kelly Knapp played some fun games, also finishing 3-5. Nathan Young made some great shots, good crowd support, was into it for him. He finishes 3-5 as well. And then Nova Scotia, Team Thompson at 2-6, and Derek Zalmogoski, 0-8. On the week for them, and they just kind of ran out of gas as it went. The games kind of got more blowouty and blowouty as the week went on for them. So not the greatest debut for Derek Zalmogoski as Team Nunavut, but it's a process
for sure. I think I'm pretty excited for this sort of next level in this pool. Like Nathan Young showed me quite a lot this week.
Yeah, it's impressive.
He was really impressive, made a lot of shots. They were in a lot of games. And Kelly Knapp, same thing. Him and his team really played well. And then you talked about Tyler Smith. They did it with three guys. Like,
yeah,
wild to do a whole event like this with three and show as well as they did. So, you know, we'll see what happens when they come back as a full complement.
Yeah. This got some traction, Scott. Do you think there should be a rule that you can't go to an event like this with three? Because if one of them gets sick or hurt,
yeah,
what are you going to eat? There's no margin for error there. Like I get why you might not want to put in somebody who you haven't played with all year into the event, but don't you have to at least have somebody like available?
Can't there be like a local? You know how
they do that at other events, the
emergency goalie.
Yeah.
Right. Just get a local and say like, all right, listen, if we're in dire straits, you're coming in.
You're in. Yeah. I mean, there was that famous sign in 2022 that somebody brought when Brad Gushue was playing with three, he said a sign that said, "Hey, Brad, my shoes are in the car."
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, probably there should be some rule about not bringing that few people. Like, if you want to only play with three, but make sure you've got
somebody just in case.
A contingency. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you have it. That's all the goings on from the Brier. Scott, anything else that stood out to you from the week in St. John's?
I think that's it. I'm excited to hear firsthand from some of the friends we had that were there, how their experience was. I did see Sean a screeching in ceremony.
Yep.
A very, very brief one with a shot of our merch.
Yeah. Featured the Game of Stones hoodie.
Yeah. So anybody that is tuning in.
Yep.
Thanks to that. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. I was, put it in wrestling term. I marked out when I saw it. Like, yeah.
Heck yeah.
It was very exciting. Yeah. So there you have it. The 2026 Brier in the books. We will see Matt Dunstone in Ogden, Utah in a couple weeks playing the men's world championship. First men's world championship for him. He, of course, is a former world junior champion. So, different level, but not his first world championship, not the first world championship for any of them. Colton Lott has played the junior world championship in the mixed doubles. And of course the Hardens have played world championships as well. So a pretty experienced team for a guy who just won his first Brier, for two of the guys who just won their first Brier. Actually a lot of world's experience on this team.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. So I think they'll be fine. And Sean, I'm excited that it's going to be in the U.S. because it means the time zones are good for us to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe both are in the same time zone, both the men's and women's, with Calgary and Ogden, Utah.
I believe you're right.
So there you have it. That's pretty good. I did very much enjoy, though, St. John's. 6 p.m.
Oh, yeah. This is beauty.
That's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. So more of that, please. But that's not what we're going to get as we turn our attention to beautiful Calgary, Alberta, and the 2026 Women's World Curling Championship. 13 teams are in the field for this event. And Scott, very different vibes this year. We're going to go through all the teams, but because a bunch of Olympic teams are not there, including, I'd say, the powerhouse teams are not there from the Olympic Games. Well, the medalists, all of the medalists are not there. What does that tell us about the field, or does that shape your expectations of what we're going to get here at the 2026 Women's Worlds?
I think the field is a little more open for the podium. I think that's what it tells me. And that this is the chance to see the next generation. Like, we saw, I think Eve Muirhead won her first in 2010 in an Olympic year.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's wrong. Germany won, but Eve Muirhead was there and was pretty good, if I remember right. So these Olympic years are like the time to see the next generation come through, and that's a lot of what we're going to see here this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as we look at this field, I'm counting 1, 2, 3 Olympic teams who are here out of the 13, so 10 teams that are different from the Olympic Games. So a pretty big change from what we saw over in Cortina. But Scott, let's go through the field. Let's talk about these 13 teams. I have them here in order of world rankings at the moment. But actually, before we do that, Scott, obviously, I got asked the question, how many of these 13 teams do you think can win?
I think 5 can win.
5. Okay, who you got?
5. I got Kim Yoon-ji.
Yep.
Carrie Anderson.
Yep.
Xenia Schwaller. Satsuki Fujisawa.
Mm-hmm.
And Madalena DuPont.
Okay. All right. So you're just going with the 5 highest ranked teams.
In my rankings, Wang Rui is
It's higher.
Higher than Madalena DuPont.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's 4. I don't know if Madalena DuPont can win. for as much as I would love it to happen, but I also didn't think she could win the Euros. So, you know, prove me wrong, Madalena.
That's what I've been saying, but everybody thinks I'm just a hater.
Yes, that's true. We do think you are a hater. So I think this is pretty open because of who's not there this year, and it should be a lot of fun. But what I think shapes it a little bit are the number of really good teams, but there are also rookies. And we talked about this at the Scotties and the Briar, but first time at an event, you got to kind of learn the ropes a little bit of what that event is all about and how it goes. So that's where I have a little bit of doubt with maybe Schwaller and Isabella Rana. Because I think she has the talent and is good enough to win Rano. But again, first time.
Yeah, I am missing Isabella Rana on my list.
Okay.
Because I didn't spell it with two A's.
Ah.
Because it's the A with the circle on top, right?
Yeah, I don't know what that's called, what that particular accent is called.
Yeah, I knew once. Somebody in Norway told me, but now I don't remember.
All right. So I think they, as a team, that's sort of where my doubt maybe comes in. It's really hard to win your first time, but let's go through the field, Scott, and talk about the teams. As I said, I have these in order of their world ranking right now, and we are going to start with the Korean side, fourth ranked team in the world, skipped by Kim Eun-ji, alongside Kim Min-ji, Kim Soo-ji, and Seo Yeon. This team went 5-4 in the Olympic Games. They lost their last game to Rachel Homan. That was essentially a playoff game, win and in scenario there. So they did miss the playoffs. On the season, they have some good results. 5-4, winning the bronze medal at the Pan Continental Championship in the fall. Last year at the World Championship, they went 10-4. Overall, 10-2 in the round robin, but then lost to Canada in the semifinal, lost to China in the bronze medal game. In terms of the percentage points of the event last year, Kim was the third ranked skip in the field. She was at 86.2%. The next highest skip who was in the field this year, who is in the field this year, is Wang Rui. And she was at 83.6%. So when you look at last year's results of the teams that are in the field this year, Kim was significantly better than the rest of them. Now, Carrie Anderson, you'd expect to probably be at that level. But otherwise, she has a pretty big starting point, I think, ahead of everybody else. Bronze medalist at the 2023 Worlds, kind of looking to get over the top here. And without Rachel Homan there, for as much as we say that, you know, Kim could beat Rachel Homan, and they've played some humdinger of games. Yeah. In the playoffs, in the, and I'll throw that game in Cortina in as a playoff game, Rachel Holman's got the better of her.
That's right.
It's sort of the round robin where Team Kim has given them Rachel Homan the struggle. So without Rachel Homan there, I really think, Scott, this is the, not only because they're the highest ranked team, but just broad strokes, you look at results over the course of the season, I think they're the favorite and have to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Team Anderson, maybe in any other year, would be the favorite, but they have not had as good a year. And so, yeah, looking at it, I think you're right, Sean. They're the team to beat. Hammer efficiency over 40%, 43%, pretty good. Like, there's four teams that are over 40, and they're the top four ranked teams in this field.
All right, Scott, let's move down to the fifth-ranked team in the world, that being Canada, represented by Carrie Anderson alongside Val Sweeting, Shannon Burchard, and Carly Burgess. This team won the bronze medal in 2022 and 2023. Obviously, Carly Burgess not on that team. That is the change here with Carly joining the team. In the Scotties this year, the key for them was multiple scores. They scored 33 multiples in 12 games and only gave up 16 multiples in those games. As a result, their point differential was kind of nuts at 99-64 in their point differential. That includes a couple big losses to Caitlin Laws as well. So I think if they can keep that pressure up, now, of course, at the Scotties, there was some issues. the level of competition this year with some rookie teams, and that maybe not as deep as it has been in years past, but that is very impressive in the peripheral numbers. And if they can do that over the course of the week, keep that pressure up, continue to convert with the hammer as they were doing there in the Scotties, they're going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, you're right, Sean. They're pretty good. Again, one of the teams, the hammer factor, or the hammer efficiency is at 43, the same. Where they got tripped up a little bit this year was giving up steals. I'm not super worried about that with Carey and the way that they've been playing. Long layoff though, right? Since
longer than normal. Yeah.
We'll see how rusty they are. If they can get off to a good start, there's no reason this team shouldn't be expecting to be at the top.
Yeah, I would say first, like, normal worlds for them too. Right, like 2020 doesn't happen. 2021's in the bubble. 2022 still weird environs where there was no fans of the Scotties and the worlds were weird circumstances. 2023, you have all the pressure of the Olympic points and the qualifications at that point, and trying to make sure Canada gets a spot. Yeah. So here we go. It's a doors open. Buy tickets. People will be there. No pressure from Curling Canada in terms of Olympic qualification. Just go play.
Yeah, just go play. So, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure she's sick of that building.
You know. They know it the best out of anyone.
Anybody in the field, they know this building front and back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you need any tips of where you can find a good bite to eat or the quietest bathroom or the best place to get a nap in the wind sport, call Carey Anderson. She knows.
She knows. She knows.
All right, Scott, let's move on to the sixth ranked team in the world. That is Switzerland, Xenia Schwaller alongside Selina Gaffner, Fabian Rieder, and Selina Richichet. This is the 2024 World Junior Championship team, all making their debuts at a World Championship. They did beat Savannah Tiranzoni 2-1 in the Swiss final. They lost the first game in an extra end, and then won 7-5 and 7-3 to take that championship. This was days after the Olympic Games, but they still won. They still won that event. Interesting to me, Scott, Switzerland in their national championship only plays 8 end games. Curious.
Well, it was just after the Olympics, right? They're tired.
Yes. And we'll note too, John Epping will be on the bench as the coach. So, Scott, what do you think for this team? Obviously, a very solid pedigree, world champions, all of them at the junior level. This transition into the women's game, they've had some okay results on tour, mixed as you would expect for a very young team. Can they make this jump here in their first appearance?
I think it would be unwise to count out a Swiss women's curling team.
Yeah.
If history teaches us lessons, then that is the most important one to learn. Sean, they've played the most games of anyone in the field. They're tied for the number of games this year, 95 games so far.
Ooh, that's a lot of games.
67 and 28. Pretty good. They got the highest hammer efficiency in the field at 45%. And their steel defense is pretty respectable. So they've got the highest hammer factor. I like this team, Sean. I think they should definitely be considered contenders for the top of the podium and playoffs for sure.
All right, Scott, let's move down to Japan, which is the ninth ranked team in the world. Tsuki Fujisawa, Chinami Yoshida, Yumi Suzuki, and Yurika Yoshida. They went 4-3 back at the Pan Continental Championship, missed the playoffs on a tiebreaker with Korea, although they did beat Rachel Holman in that event. Fujisawa was the third-ranked skip at the Pan Continental at 83.1%. Yoshida was second at third at 85.7%, and Suzuki second at the second position at 87.5%. So the peripherals were really good there, and I would note that all three of their losses at the Pan Continental were by a single point. And when you look at the results and how those games played out, they gave up 2 in 10 to lose to China, gave up 2 in 10 to lose to the United States, and gave up a steal in 10 to lose their third game. So Scott, when you look at those results there, like in all of those scenarios, if you look at win percentage, they were above 50% to win their game, right? Being up one in the 10th twice and tied with the hammer. Like in all those scenarios, you have a better than 50% chance of winning. So you just got to tighten up that end of game here as we get into this event. And if they can do that, which they can, they're very, very good. But you keep putting yourself in positions where late game scenarios, you have the edge, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and that's a bit unlucky, right? To end up with that kind of record, given those percentage chances to win. So even if luck just evens out a bit for them, they'll be definitely in the mix. Like I said, they're one of the teams I said could win. So I'll stick to that assertion.
All right, Scott, let's get on to the fifth team that you thought could win. That is Denmark. They are 12th ranked team in the world. Madelena DuPont, Mathilde Halsey, Denise DuPont, and Mie Larsen. This team went 4-5 at the Olympic Games last month, 5-4 back at the Euros in the fall. Last year at the World Championship, 5-7. This is the 17th appearance for Madelena DuPont. Best result was back in 2007 with a silver medal. Should note, Scott, this team did make the playoffs in this building back in 2021, finishing the event at an 8-6 record. Of course, I can't really compare 2026 to 2021 and the bubble and everything weird that happened, the outbreak and no cameras and everything that went on in 2021. But if you look at the past couple of years since the European Championship victory in 2024 for Denmark and Madelena DuPont, pretty much a 500 player at these big events. And a couple times it's been good enough to make the playoffs, other times it hasn't been, but she's kind of like a golfer who's always going to shoot par no matter how difficult the course is somehow, right? That's kind of what her results have been over the past couple of years, just always hovering around 500 and always being a threat to jump into the playoffs depending on how the wins and losses play out.
Yeah, they're one of those teams that nobody really wants to play, right? You're kind of like, oh, man, it's not going to be an easy game.
No.
So, yeah, I did say I think they can win precisely because of that. They're just sort of in every game, and they could sneak in to the playoffs and then win, boom, 3 games, you're a world champion.
Yep.
Right? So, I don't, you know, I'm not going to put any shekels down on it, but it wouldn't shock the world, or it wouldn't shock me, right, if they were the world champions.
All right, Scott, let's move down to Sweden and Isabella Rano, the 13th ranked team in the world. She's alongside Almida Duval, Maria Larsson, Linda Stenlund, and familiar name Maria Pritz is the coach of this team. All four players are making their world championship debut. Of course, Isabella Rano is coming off a gold medal in the mixed doubles in Cortina at the Olympic Games, was also the skip of the 2023 Swedish entry into the European Championship. That team went 6-5 there. Almida Duval has a bronze medal from the 2022 Olympics in the mixed doubles playing with Oscar Erickson. So while they are all making their world championship debuts in the four-person game here, a lot of experience up and down this lineup. 37-31 on the season. They did make the playoffs at the Masters and the Tour Challenge. And Scott, this feels like this, for me, this emergence of this team this year. Like they were at Slams last year, but now you're getting more results from them. It's been a really good development and growth year for them. It's weird to say development and growth year when the skip has an Olympic gold medal around her neck. But as a team, as the four-person team, it really feels like they've asserted themselves and come onto the scene in a more assertive way this year. And of course, we got to see what happens with Anna Hasselberg and that team. But would not surprise me if this is the first of a streak, potentially, of world championship appearances for Isabella Rano and her side.
Yeah, they've played a lot of games so far this year. well, not a lot of games, 68, but so not as many as other people, but they played 30 games against teams in the doubletakeout.com top 10.
Wow.
So half of their games against these teams, that, which is pretty like good for learning, right? They're 12 and 18 in those games, but they've played a lot of these teams that are here. They played Tirinzoni a bunch. They played Homan a bunch. You can only learn from those games. And so that's what I like the most about this team, is that they've had the chance to go and play a lot against a lot of really good teams. They've beaten Anna Hasselberg quite a few times this year. Mm-hmm. So just that repetition and the confidence to know that you belong on the ice with these teams.
Yeah, that's key.
I think that really helps them. And so I'd expect some stuff from them this week.
Yeah, I agree. It should be fun to see them on this stage. So see what they do with it on their first appearance. Mm-hmm. All right, next up is China, 16th ranked team in the world, represented by Wang Rui, Han Yu, Dong Ziki, and Jiang Jiayi. They went 2-7 at the Olympic Games last month, but they are your reigning and will be forever your reigning Pan-Continental champions, having won the final version of that event. They went 7-0 through the round robin at the Pan-Continental back in the fall, beat Korea in the semifinal, and beat Rachel Holman Canada in the final to win gold. They were the best in shooting percentage at lead, second, and skip. Han Yu was the low player relative to the rest of the field, fifth at the third position at 83.5%. But Scott, if they can put together a week like that, we saw it last year at the World Championship where everything kind of came together for them. Not a great week at the Olympics, obviously going 2-7, but the talent's there. And I think in this field, relative to what we saw at the Olympics with those top three teams not being there, I think they can make some noise here.
I think so, yeah. I mentioned I bet on them to win the Olympics just because the odds
long,
were so
really long odds. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 20-1 or something. And yeah, I think as a 20-1, they could make noise. And if they get on a hot streak, they're just as liable as any to be there at the end of the week. Just that their variance is a lot higher than the other teams.
Yeah, I agree. Like there's a lot of, like a pretty high ceiling and a potentially low floor. I agree.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, let's move on to Norway, the 29th ranked team in the world, represented by Torlid Bjornstad, Nora Ustgard, Ingeborg Forbregd, and Erin Meslo. We'll note too that Millie Haslev Nordby is the alternate for this team. That's a familiar last name. Scott, when we look at this team, another very young team, as Torlid, Nora, and Ingeborg played in the 2025 World Junior Championships, going 4-5 at that event. They also played at the University Games last year, 2025, going 6-5 there. Aaron is the old hat on the team at the a ripe old age of 25, and she was the alternate for Marianne Warvak in 2022 at the World Championship. So she's been here before, at least, making her debut as a full-time player. And she was the skip at the 2022 World Championship, where she skipped the Norwegian side to a 7-4 record. So a lot of talent here, obviously, by having represented your country at a junior championship. Not that much success on the world stage at the junior level. So I would expect some growing pains here as we see what the next wave of Norwegian women's curling could be with this foursome.
Yeah, I talked about how many games Isabella Rana has played against the top 10. Bjornstad has played 5 of their 41. So not as much. And I don't think there's any wins in there. But do you want to hear some scores from the Norwegian National Championship?
Absolutely, I do.
So won the first game 11-1 in 6 ends. Won game 2 11-0 in 4 ends. All steals. Won the next game 13-0 in 4 ends. Ooh. After scoring a 6 in the first.
Yowzes.
11-0 in the next game in four ends, and then lost 6-2 to Rurvik in the final. But
wow,
that's like a pretty good plus minus.
Not bad. Know? It's not bad at all.
So yeah, a lot of young talent, but we'll see what it's like, their first taste of the world scene.
All right, Scott, let's move on to Italy. And it is the 30th ranked team in the world of Stefania Constantini alongside Elena Mathis, Marta Lodisserto, and Giulia Zaldini Lacidelli. They went 2-7 at the Olympic Games last month, 4-5 at the Euros back in the fall. They went 4-8 at the World Championship last year. This is the seventh appearance for Stefania Constantini at a World Championship. Best result back in 2024 when she went 10-2 in the round robin, beat Madalena Dupont in the quarterfinal, but then lost to Savannah Tirinzoni in the semi and lost to Korea in the bronze medal match. So Scott, this team didn't have great results at the Olympic Games. I do wonder though if this is an event where they just come in and are like, okay, hey, pressure's off. Because we've seen them had good runs at events before, whether it's slams or at those world championships a couple years ago. Maybe they just come in and play loose and free and have a good week.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. Why not? Yeah, just not playing right now at the top of their game. So I'd be a bit surprised, but who knows? Maybe playing loose and free will help them.
All right, Scott, next up is Turkey, the 37th ranked team in the world. It is Dilşat Yıldız, Osner Polat, İklal Karaman, and Berfin Sengul. 3-9 last year at the Worlds, 5-4 at the Euros. Really good a week for them back at the Euros in the fall. Best world championship result was 6-6 back in 2023. We do have a lineup change this year compared to last year, as Karaman is in at the second position. That is a change replacing Fayat Safak Kalikusu, who was the, and I think this is based on sort of the stats. We've talked about this with Turkey and Yıldız and her team before, that Yıldız has all the shots, but she needs more support on the front end. And Kalikusu last year was the second worst second at only 70.9%. And she was only better than the Lithuanian second, who was in the 60s. And so for context to that, the 11th ranked second last year was Tara Peterson, and she was at 78.7%. So 8 percentage points worse than the third worst ranked player in the position. That's just not sustainable over the course of an event with the quality of players. So as a result, we have Karaman in. I think that hopefully will balance out the lineup a little bit and put Dilşat into better spots for her shots. We've talked about Berfin Sengul before. She was better last year, 85.2%, which was still 10th, but the gap between her and everybody else was a lot less. So we saw the improvement on the lead position. We'll see if this lineup change creates that at the second position and reduces that gap that we've seen over the years with Dilşat Yıldız in Turkey.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Sean, right there. That's what's going to matter. This team 2-15 against teams in the top 25 this year. So they're playing these games and learning from them, but they're not getting the results. So maybe the change will help, and we'll see how it goes.
All right, Scott, let's go to Scotland for the 40th ranked team in the world, skipped by Faye Henderson. She was the alternate for Team GB at the Olympic Games. She'll be alongside Lisa Davey, Haley Duff, and Katie McMillan. The bulk of the experience on this team lies with Haley Duff. She was on that 2022 gold medal team with Eve Muirhead. Faye Henderson was the skip at the 2023 World Junior Championship, where she did win a gold medal. So she is a World Junior Champion. Henderson and McMillan were also the back end of the 2022 World Junior team that went 3 and 6. This team did win the Scottish Championship last month. Rebecca Morrison, the Olympic rep, did not compete in that event. Not great overall in the season in terms of their record, 23-25 so far. They went 0-4 in the Masters Tier 2, lost the semifinal of the Under 25 Slam as well. They lost the final of the Tallinn Ladies International Challenger. That's a pretty good field to Madalena DuPont. So the results at those high-level events, with the exception of the Scottish Championships, haven't been great. But again, Scott, a team with pretty good pedigree, and I think probably just having to grow into the women's game a little more.
Yeah, I think you're right. We've even seen that for the Morrison team, having to, you know, just grow and get better. And the transition from juniors is not easy. It's not instant. We've seen that here in Canada too. And so it just takes time. But this is the kind of event where they can, you know, get some of that experience and start to get better and feel more comfortable. And like you say, the talent's there, but it's about what's between the ears. And you can only build that through this kind of experience.
All right, Scott, next up is the United States of America, 51st ranked team in the world of Delaney Strauss, Anne O'Hara, Sydney Mullaney, and Madison Bear. So, Scott, Delaney, Anne, and Sydney were part of the 2022 World Junior team for the United States that went 8-3 en route to a bronze medal. Madison Bear is a little older and played in 3 World Juniors in her own right, including skipping the 2018 entry, going 4-5. The team went 4-3 in the round robin of the USA Nationals last month, but that was good enough to get them into the 1-2 game. It was a 3-way tie for second place at 4-3, and Delaney Strauss gets into the 1-2 game. She lost to Elizabeth Cousins, who had gone 6-1 in the round robin, but then beat Kim Rhyme in the semifinal and came back and got her revenge on Elizabeth Cousins in the final to win the USA Nationals. At the Olympic trials, they got into a tiebreaker there. So some pretty good results, obviously, to win the American National Championship. Not bad at the trials as well, but overall about a 500 team on the season, and all are pretty young. And, you know, Kathy Overton-Clapham will be there as the coach, going to want to lean on her for some experience. But as we said with the last couple of teams here, Scott, a young team kind of trying to continue to manage that transition from junior play into the women's game.
Yeah, and I think this is just going to be that one step up from what the USA Nationals is. So they'll get the chance to compete against some teams they haven't competed against, and learn a few things and have fun in Calgary.
Hopefully. Calgary's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, rounding out the field here, it is Australia, the 89th ranked team in the world, skipped by Helen Williams, alongside Sarah Westman, Kristen Swerlins, and Karen Tithridge. All are making their debut at the World Championship. Scott, you want to hear something fun?
I do.
So, this team lives very, very far apart from each other. So Helen Williams lives in Dumfries. Sarah Westman in beautiful St. Thomas, Ontario. Kristen Swerlins in even more beautiful Melbourne, Australia. And Karen Tithridge lives in Winnipeg. Lovely Winnipeg.
Wow. That's got to be the record for most distance between 4 teammates.
It's pretty far. Yeah. So a really cool story that they're here. Also say, Kristen Swerlins is listed as a scrub scout nurse. I don't know what that is, and I didn't want to Google it. Do you know what that is?
A scrub
scout nurse.
Scout nurse.
Yeah. It sounds like a very interesting job.
Is it, let's have some, conjecture. Is it a nurse who's does her work in the scrub, which is maybe what they would call the bush or the scrub, and has to go you know, help scouts that are doing scouting? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Or do you scout the best places to scrub in to the OR?
Yeah, like, are you scouting? Is that like a way that, like, you're doing the preliminary triage of patients? It's like you're scouting them out. Like, all right, you have to go to this place and you go to this place. Or like, oh, we need this doctor for this. Like, is that what they're doing?
I've gone to private mode to.
Yeah, you don't want this one screwing up your algorithm.
Huh. The role requires you to adapt quickly and change whatever. Working alongside surgeons. The scrub is responsible for anticipating the surgeon's requirements interoperatively and is complemented by a good scout who uses non-technical skills to ensure that all equipment is available before it needs to be asked for.
Ooh. So it's like you're the surgeon in that you have to know everything about the surgery and all the equipment.
Yeah.
You just don't do the surgery.
Yeah. You just need to know what is needed and then be able to get that to them.
So it is an interesting job.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that is the Australian team. This is a really cool story. Australia's there. Great story that you have this representation from Australia. They're all, as I said, making their world debuts. They went 2-5 back at the Pan Continental to qualify. Scott, the two wins, though, were against New Zealand and Mexico. And they're not in this field. The closest game outside of that, of their losses, was an 8-6 loss to Japan, but everything else was at least a 6-point loss. We'll note that Helen Williams did skip Australia at the 2025 World Senior Championship, where she went 2-3. But I'll be honest, I think for this team, playing 10 ends will be the victory, will be the goal.
Yeah, that's a worthy goal.
Yeah.
And like I said, Sean, to have fun in Calgary.
Yeah, enjoy yourselves. And you're at a world championship. Could be the only chance you have to do this, given the new rules about how you qualify into world championships. It's going to be harder now for Australia and New Zealand to get in than it has been for the past quad. So go have a good time. Enjoy it. Take it all in.
Go to the patch.
Yeah.
Tell people you're a player.
Yeah, I played in a world championship. Get out of my face. And then when I go home, I'm going to help the surgeon save somebody's life. What do you got?
I got two things. What do you got?
Come at me.
No, I meant make friends, Shaw.
Oh, no, I'm meant to go be very aggressive if anybody gives you crap for if you have a bad record. Like,
oh, well, yeah.
Do that.
Yeah, I'm playing. You're not.
I'm playing. You're not.
Yeah.
So there you have it. 13 teams in the field out in Calgary for the 2026 Women's World Curling Championship. Scott, what is your podium?
Wow. I think Xenia Schwaller is going to win because Switzerland.
Okay.
I like Team Gim to be on the podium, and Kerry Anderson can't lose a world championship again, right?
So you're picking Kerry Anderson to win?
No, Anderson second, Xenia Schwaller.
Oh, it's Schwaller. Yeah, you're picking Schwaller to win. Okay, I'm going with Gim to win over Kerry Anderson. I'll put that as my final. Yep. And I'm going to say Madelena DuPont in the bronze medal spot.
You would. I'm too much of a coward.
So there you have it. All the goings on there in Calgary. The times are going to be a little weird. I think on Sunday they're going to be on the half hour, but everything else is on the hour. So okay. 9, 2, and 7 local time there. Oh, Calgary, available TSN in Canada, different internationally than those of you, our friends in the United States and in Europe, who were able to watch the Scotties and the Briar on the YouTube feed. That, of course, is not going to be possible this time because it's World Curling and there's the international feeds available. So you have to go through World Curling to get access to it if you're outside of Canada. Unfortunately, because that was really good what they did during the Scotties and the Briar, but no longer available. Again, just the nature of this event, but a TSN production in Calgary. And I very much prefer the TSN production to the World Curling production. So should be a good time.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right. So that's going to be it for us this week. Enjoy the games from Calgary, everybody. We'll be back next week to talk about all the goings on in Cortina. Scott said this last week, we're not going to get into what's been going on at the Paralympic Games. But last week I said, Sandy McEwen, like, come on. This week I'm going to say John Thurston. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Some good stuff, man. There's been some good stuff.
Like, I thought last week, I was like, oh, shot of the year is wrapped up. Yeah. And then John Thurston was like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
That was something else. So we'll talk about what's been going on in Cortina next week. So if you want to hear that and everything else we got going on as we go through the season of champions here, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Like, rate, comment, all the good stuff helps other people find the show, keeps us growing. Of course, head on over to GameStonesPod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. We're on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, Game of Stones Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to let us know what you want to hear on the show, GameStonesPodcast@gmail.com. Scott, the time has changed. We have sprung forward.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's real dark in the morning.
Yeah, don't like it.
You know, I'll get over it. I don't like waking up early, but such is life, I suppose. Sure. Living in our imprisons to society. But yeah, it was quite dark the first couple mornings, and so getting up was a bit of a struggle. You walk to work in the mornings, yeah?
I walk to the bus. I walk home from work at night. I do bus in the morning.
Okay, so I mean that's also scary, right? Waiting for the bus in the dark.
Well, I wasn't doing that in the dark.
Oh, okay.
I took out the bus, or the sunrise right now here in Ottawa is around 7:25, 7:30 or something. And I leave the house around 8 to go get the bus. But for the first time in a couple of weeks, when I took out the recycling and stuff on Monday, that was in the dark. And for most of the winter, it's in the dark. But then the past few weeks, it had been in the light. And I enjoy that a lot more. And now it's back in the dark.
Yeah, being in the... in the dark when you're doing that is just no fun. You're like, no. What am I doing?
And then I got home and somebody took my bins, my recycle bins.
No way.
They weren't there anymore. They're free, people. Like, you don't have to steal them.
But I don't think they're free anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
Because the city doesn't do the garbage anymore.
The city doesn't do it anymore. It's all private. Oh, so yeah, my bins are gone.
Well, that's...
My black recycle bins. I did read something that they're not going to delineate between blue and black anymore. It was black bins for the paper and cardboard and stuff. But they said moving forward, if you request a replacement, they're just giving you blue all the time now.
Oh, so you got to put your cardboard in a blue bin.
You can, yeah. Which I kind of like. Then you don't need as many bins.
I guess, yeah.
So, you know. It
stands to reason.
So fine, steal my bins, people.
Everybody, bins available at Sean's house.
More bins than you paid for. That's what's been going on. We didn't curl on Monday, so we have nothing else to talk about. So
that's right. But Sean, we are, chasing those bar bucks.
We're on track. We've had a good run here in the last draw. We've doubled our win total from the previous 15 games of the season. So we'll see what comes up in the final three games as we come down the stretch of the season for us. I know for a lot of you out there in the tail end of this season of champions. So enjoy it there, folks.
We've also got, Sean, the senior championships happening in Ontario this weekend.
Oh, that's true. Yes, this weekend, the Ontario Senior Championships. It's a really good field, I have to say. Of course, good luck to our pal Jesse, who is playing, lost the semifinal last year. They had a really good run and were in really good shape in the semifinal. And then I turned it on to watch it and it all went to hell.
So
good luck to them out in Oakville. So we'll be certainly tracking that this week.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So good luck to Jesse and his guys, and to all you out there who are wrapping up your seasons. Good luck as you wrap it up, and enjoy the rest of the curling on TV. As I say, we'll be back with you next week to talk about more of the action from the Pebble Dice. But until we chat to you then, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
Final.